appreciate everybody coming out tonight. We will start with our introductions tonight. I'm Riley Roberts. I'm actually filling in for Braden. He is not with us tonight. Neither is Bart. I believe those are the only two that aren't here tonight. So right before we do introductions, just go over a couple of RAC procedures. We do have comment cards. If you have those, you can deliver them to this young man right here. And then if there are multiple comments, if someone gets up before you and has a similar comment to what you're saying, you can just echo that same sentiment so that we don't drag this out as any longer than we need to. We will make those notes, especially if there are multiple individuals making that same type of comment. Please remember there is a comment portion and a question portion, and please distinguish between the two. And with that, we will start on our right side down here with introductions and just move to the left.
Greg Lobb from Iron County in Agriculture.
Tammy Pearson, Beaver County Commissioner. Elected official.
Verlin King from Bicknell Agriculture.
Nick Jorgensen from St. George, non-consumptive.
Kevin Bunnell, I'm with the Division of Wildlife. I'm a non-voting member of the RAC.
Austin Atkinson from Cedar City, representing public at large.
Representing public at large.
Sean Kelly, Fillmore, Forest Service.
Sean Stewart Escalante for BLM.
We will start tonight with the approval of our agenda and the minutes from our last meeting. Has everyone had an opportunity to look at the agenda? Is there anything that need to be added to that? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make motion.
Motion made by Craig.
Jeff, the minute, Jeff.
Tammy, second. All in favor? All right. It actually has the Wildlife Board meeting update from the chairman. Chairman is not here. I'm actually going to pass that along to Kevin. So Kevin will actually take both agenda item 3 and 4.
Okay, I'll just hit the highlights from the board meeting. On the statewide deer plan, the Southern RAC had voted to add a third tier of 21 to 25 bucks per 100 does. There was a motion to kind of that recognized that by the board. It wasn't exactly that, but it would have extended buck to doe ratios a little bit higher. That did not pass, although there was a motion made. The restrictions on transporting deer with CWD from skull plates to skulls, as was recommended from this RAC, was passed. The plan was reduced from a 7-year plan down to a 5-year plan. And that's the basic highlights on the deer plan. Bucks and bulls, similar, they addressed the skull plate issue again. On the CWMU management plans, there was a lot of discussion on a single CWMU that wasn't in our region, in the southeastern region, took quite a bit of time. But everything essentially passed as presented there. On the point creep issue, that passed with the one exception that the agricultural community asked that the landowner deer permits and the landowner appreciation deer permits not, that people don't lose their points if they redeem one of those tags, and that was passed with that, with those being exempted from that. you know, that's probably the highlights of a pretty long meeting. If there are specific questions, I'll be happy to try to address them on anything else.
Do we have any questions on any of that? Gene?
Yeah, somewhere it was alluded to that unit plans were to be done by region, one region every year. I was wondering where the southern region is on that.
Yeah, that's a good question, Gene. So there was a motion by the board relative to the statewide plan that instead of the statewide management plan dictating the buck-to-do ratios for each unit, that those would be done at the unit level. We do those plans on a five-year rotation based on when our habitat crew is in a certain region, and the southern region we're in that rotation right now. So you'll see deer unit plans from the southern region over the next few months, within this coming year. So we're up to bat in that rotation right now.
So will that be discussed in the April meeting then?
I don't know if it's going to be April, but it'll be sometime within this next year, Gene, on when they get done. Now the buck-to-doe ratios will be set in the unit plans, but they'll still only be the two choices, the 15 to 17 or the 18 to 20. I don't know that it's going to make much of a difference in the southern region because all of our units are already at the 18 to 20. I suspect in other places of the state, some of the units that are currently 15 to 17 will jump up to 18 to 20 as a part of that process. I don't know that it's going to have much of an impact here.
Any other questions? Tammy?
What was the decision on the five-year to seven-year?
It was reduced to five-year.
Okay, sorry, I missed that. You probably said it, but I was writing stuff down. Thank
you. I did, but I'll say it again.
All right, we'll go to the regional update.
You know, it seems like we were just here, and I gave a pretty extensive regional update at the RAC meeting, or at the last RAC meeting, so I'm going to be really brief tonight. I mentioned last time that our wildlife crew was out and was just beginning deer captures at that time. So far, they've captured about 150 deer and collared them in the region. Over the next couple of weeks, they'll do about another 150, and then there'll be some additional elk captures and some other things later in the spring. So that's where we're at there. From our aquatic section, we've got ice forming on a lot of the reservoirs. We're not aware that we've got safe ice anywhere yet. I was told there was some people out on Panguitch Lake over the weekend, but that ice has since come off the lake. And so I would give it another couple of weeks before anybody's out on the ice. Paul, are you aware of anywhere where we do have safe ice? Okay. And that's all I have, unless there's other questions.
All right, moving right along then, if there's no other questions, we will get to item number 5, which is an action item, and we will turn that time over to Darren.
Thanks, I appreciate the opportunity to come tonight. I appreciate all of you taking time out of your schedules and for everybody that's here to talk about this item. What we're doing tonight is we've got some recommendations regarding black bear and cougar rule and some pursuit recommendations. Quickly, just to give a little bit of background, last year at this time, the Wildlife Board passed a three-year guidebook for black bears. So again, this is spelled out in the black bear management plan. We manage on a three-year cycle and make permit recommendations every third year. So tonight, with one exception, we're not making any recommended changes to permits. We did have an issue that arose, a couple of issues that arose in the interim that we are going to talk about. They're very specific to a specific few units. But we'll get into that here in a minute. But this is we're not going to be recommending any permits tonight except for one unit. First of all, what we're wanting to talk about a little bit tonight is we've been approached by some of our land management agency partners on the LaSalle's, and the San Juan to a lesser extent, but mainly on the LaSalle's, about the high number of bear pursuers and dogs in the spring. In addition to that, our law enforcement folks in the southeastern region are struggling to police that hunt, and they ask us, they've raised some concerns. What we did in order to try and address those concerns was to put together a group to try to get to the bottom of, you know, what are the issues, what are some possible solutions that the division could recommend, and so we did that. This was a group primarily based out of the southeastern region and involved, since it primarily dealt with the LaSalle's, we had houndsmen on the committee that hunted that unit. We also had a couple of members of the houndsman board and presidency, so there were four houndsmen on the group. There were three members of the Forest Service, both representing the local ranger district and then a state rep. We had one member of the committee that was a representative of CITLA. They have some state institutional trust lands that are part of the overall unit. And then we had division folks, myself, Blair Stringham facilitated the meeting. He's an assistant chief in the wildlife section. And then we had a local biologist and local managers. And we had one member of law enforcement from the southeastern region, and that was the group. We also had two members of the board, Kevin Albrecht and Byron Bateman sat in the group to discuss. We met twice, talked quite a bit, and we feel like at the end we tried to come up with some compromises to address the concerns. First of all, one of the primary goals of the group was to try to identify what exactly is the problem. Can we nail that down? And we came up with three primary concerns on the unit. First of all, there were too many people, just a lot of people running around up and down the roads. And secondarily, and we felt like there was an issue with the number of non-residents that choose to hunt that unit. We're kind of the only game in town in the West for spring pursuit. Again, we're just talking about pursuit now. We're not talking about hunting bears. This is just essentially catch and release. You can chase a bear, tree it. You let the bear go at the end of the chase. It's an opportunity to train dogs. And LaSalle's is the most popular unit in the state to do that in the spring. And then finally, numbers of dogs. And the Forest Service and CITLA primarily had concerns about resource damage in the spring, roads, campgrounds, lots of dogs in campgrounds, and folks not cleaning up after the dogs when they left. Law enforcement, again, it's just a numbers game. You get one or two officers that are trying to keep track of what's going on. And so the piggybacking thing, so when we're talking about pack size, you can have two or three trucks in a row and they've all got some number of dogs, and pretty soon that adds up to quite a few dogs going down the road. And so again, these are the issues the group agreed we needed to try and tackle. In addition to this, and this is apart from the LaSalle's issue, our law enforcement section has had some concerns about the clarity in the rule that might allow some bad actors to take advantage of and do some unethical and fair chase types of violations. And specifically, their concern is about people pursuing animals past the point that the animal's exhausted, can no longer escape the dogs. So this would involve continually pursuing over and over and over again. Again, this, I want to emphasize, this is a minority in the hound hunting community. This is to address and make it really clear so that when we do have someone that's doing this kind of stuff, we can charge. But it is by no means what most folks do. So moving on to some recommendations. In order to address the non-resident issue, and this is something that kind of floated to the top. So there was this concept that there were too many people running around and on the unit, and the primary concern was that we have unlimited non-resident permits available and they can all come and pursue there. They we're the only place in the West that they can go anymore. Their home states have shut down spring pursuit, and so a lot of non-residents come. We have a mechanism to do that in order to limit the number of non-residents in a particular hunt. You can make the hunt a limited entry opportunity, in this case a pursuit season that would be limited entry. Just to give you a frame of reference, we average about 88 pursuers on the LaSalles over the last 5 years. That's just people buying the permits and that's where they choose to go. Of those 88, about 20 are non-residents. So what we're recommending is that we cap the San Juan, the LaSalles, and the Book Cliffs units at 75 pursuit permits for the spring season, with 10% of the permits available for non-residents. So that would take, 20 down to 7 non-residents that have an opportunity to pursue on those premium units. Again, right now, self-selecting residents are running about 69. So this is still more permits than people have been self-selecting to go there to pursue. We're trying to tackle the non-resident issue first and see if that seems to be what most people think is the concern. Just a lot of interest from out of state. We're also recommending that we limit the number of dogs that can be used in a single pursuit to 16 statewide. And this would include hunts, pursuit, that's just the cap across the board, 16. Except for the summer pursuit seasons where the limit's already 8. And that's something that isn't changing. And this would also include lion hunting, primarily because sometimes those hunts overlap and it would be really tough for enforcement to sort out, well, I'm hunting lions and I'm hunting bears, so just recommending that we keep it at 16 across the board. One other issue that came up last year, if you may or may not remember, is we brought a recommendation about rigging. We had some concerns about hunting after legal hunting hours, and if you remember, that was not a very popular recommendation. The board did ask us to revisit that question. We looked at it again, talked to our law enforcement section, and they felt like under the current rule language that they could enforce the legal hunting hours issue, and essentially if you put dogs on the ground after legal hunting hours, then you'd be in violation. But we didn't need to address any kind of rigging language. In addition to the division's recommendations, we talked with the Forest Service and Slitlil about some of their regulations that weren't being regularly enforced, and what they've agreed to do. They currently have on the LaSalle Forest, they have a 16 dogs per camp limit, and that's something that they've agreed to enforce. They also have a 14-day camping limit on that on the forest. CITLA has agreed to follow the same regulations. We also want to work with the Houndsman Association on an ethics course to share with bear hunters. That's something that we could attach to the mandatory bear orientation, or it may be just some materials that we could send out to hunters just to talk a little bit about preserving the sport in the state. We don't want to lose hound hunting in Utah. It provides, first of all, it's a traditional use that we want to preserve. Secondly, it's a powerful management tool. Houndsmen can be selective. Houndsmen are very successful, both for lions and bears, and it'd be a shame to not have that sport continue. So we want to try to protect that and just make sure everybody's, kind of aware of some of the issues that we're seeing as an agency. And then finally, you may have seen this in the big game recommendation you just looked at. Parks recently changed their rule. They kind of flipped from not allowing hunting in parks except where it's specifically allowed to allowing hunting in parks where it's not specifically prohibited. So we're just mirroring that language in our recommendations. Something else I should mention that wasn't in the slide, but part of this going to a limit entry system. I think this will be relevant for the discussion tonight. That would include, since it's limited entry, a waiting period of 2 years and bonus points. So again, that I'm sure that that will come up tonight. So just want to make sure I mention that. That's how we do restricted pursuit hunts right now. Finally, maybe not finally, I think there's one more slide. To address the fair chase and ethical concerns, you can see in your red line copy that we're just trying to clarify the point at which a person must end a pursuit and release a bear or lion if they're pursuing or hunting. The intent has always been in the rule that once you tree an animal, if you're not going to harvest it, that you would let it go and you'd be done at that point. You wouldn't wait for it to come down and keep chasing it. The language is, a person may not pursue a single bear or lion in repeated pursuits to the point where it renders the animal physically unable to escape. And secondly, a person must make reasonable efforts to call dogs off of a bear or lion that has been cornered or held at bay. This is the unit permit recommendation I mentioned earlier that we're recommending tonight. One of the things that we promised the board and the RACs when we brought a 3-year guidebook concept around is that if we had an emergency situation where we felt like we needed to make some adjustments during that time frame, that we'd bring those recommendations out. And so we're doing this for the Boulder, the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz unit for bears. We're recommending, and this is due to declining mule deer populations, this is part of a multi-pronged effort to address concerns about deer numbers on the Boulder. But we're recommending additional 5 permits during the summer bait season. That would make a total of 17. And 30 additional spot stock permits in the fall. Just quickly, spot stock this year, this is the first year we've done it on the Boulder. It was about 10% success. We had 20 permits, we took 2 bears. So we suspect we may see maybe 5 bears taken on those 50 permits. And then the bait season is about 67% success. Overall, maybe an additional 10 bears from this recommendation. That's all I have tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. We will now open it up to the RAC if there are any questions for Darren. Austin.
I'll just ask a question for clarification for myself and for some of the RAC. Could you explain the process a little bit of obtaining a spring pursuit permit, what an individual has to go through to obtain that permit? You know, can multiple members of his family hold permits? Just a little bit about that.
I can. So right now, the way in the spring, we don't have any restricted pursuit units in the state. And so it's an over-the-counter permit that anybody can buy, and that includes non-residents. There's no cap on those permits. And so when we talk about the numbers that go to the LaSalle's, those are just people that buy a permit and then decide to go on. The answer is yes, anybody can buy one, so multiple folks in the party could buy permits. And that seems to be the case, too. You know, we have 88's the average. But a lot of those folks hunt together, so they're in groups. You know, it's not just 88 people spread out across the landscape. It's groups of folks that are hunting together or pursuing. I keep saying hunting, but this is just about the pursuit season. In addition to those pursuers on the LaSalle's in the spring, there's an additional 44 hunters. So they'd be on the landscape as well. Sometimes, again, they're in a party. You may have someone who has a kill tag with a few folks that have pursuit tags. And the average pack size is about 8, but some of those are the same dogs. So it's not like 722 dogs, but it's still a fair number of dogs out in during the hunt. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I'll just ask one more. What is the restriction or the requirement for someone running with dogs or they're in camp? Does everybody have to have a pursuit permit?
if you're going to handle dogs, you need to have a pursuit permit. In order to obtain that permit, you do have to take our bear orientation course. Actually, no, I don't know if you have to do that for pursuit, do you? Yes. Not for over-the-counter, but you do if you draw a kill tag. You have to take that. So,
okay.
So these are just over-the-counter they can go by.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Craig?
Got a couple questions. One's on the 16 dog. Is that per houndsman or is that per animal?
Per animal. So the
you
most
got more
you
than one houndsman after one animal, they can still...
Yeah, exactly. They'd have to, the max is 16, so if it's more, you know, two or three folks would have to combine dogs, but the max would be 16.
Okay. The other question is on the hunting hours, so they can't turn their dogs loose before daylight?
Right, it's a half an hour before.
Half hour sunrise, yeah, basically the same as other.
Right.
On the evening, if they got a bear or a cougar tree at dark, what's the situation there?
Maybe I'll have law enforcement address that. I don't want to.
Sorry, if someone's at a tree after dark, their dogs, is that past legal hunting?
Yeah, that's a complicated situation. That it kind of depends case by case. If they're pursuing the bear after legal hours, then yeah, but we also realize that it's not like you can just hit a magic button and all your dogs come running back, you know, right at the same time. So we try to have some practicality in how that's applied, but yes, it is, you know, the legal hunting hours does apply even with hounds situation.
Because I could see a conflict in the short winter hours and time you catch up with your dogs.
Yeah.
It could be dark.
For sure. That is a situation that we bump into.
Craig, I think the clear violation would be if somebody released dogs after the legal hunting hours. That's where it would be a clear-cut case. Other than that, it's pretty difficult.
Berlin?
Yeah, my question's on the 16 dog. Under the slight other actions, it says USFS will enforce a 16 dog per camp limit. Now, you're talking about 16 dog per pursue.
Right. So yeah, one of the things that came up in the discussion was, I think initially the feeling was that division had the answer to all these concerns, and we discussed the fact that the Forest Service, you know, if they're concerned about the numbers of dogs in their camp, they have management authority over the land. That's not something the division regulates. We can regulate how many are pursuing, but not. And it's a reg they currently have in place, but they haven't been enforcing it. So they said we'll start doing that.
Tammy?
Okay, so we'll go back to the Beaver and Beaver West units. Is that's not something that you revisited as far as counts, head counts on cats?
So for lions, just quickly, just FYI, I guess, mainly, because this did come up at the board meeting. We just put sheep on the minerals, bighorns, and we have had lions kill, last I heard, three. Have you heard more, Kevin? Or?
Yeah, Tammy, I should have addressed that in the board update. So Director Fowkes did address that at the very beginning of the board meeting, and what he said is, the board didn't address it as far as the board meeting, but we will continue to remove lions that are taking sheep by using Wildlife Services. In some ways, they're maybe the best tool for that because they're going after the specific cat. And under Mike's authority as the director, he has the authority to declare an emergency season open, and what he said is if we get it to a point where that's needed, he will exercise that authority on the Mineral Mountains. So
what we do is reopen the hunt and set a new quota, and then we'll also reevaluate in this summer if we need to raise permits or raise the quota again. We'll look at that.
Well, I just want to make sure we're on record, because I know last year we according to the plan, we could double it. So we went from 3 to 6. And if we can do that again, I'd double it again, because yeah, there's no shortage of...
We're obviously concerned, and that is under a predator management plan, so that would be a possibility. But
and typically, we'd be addressing cougar stuff in June instead of in December.
But we didn't want to wait all that time, so yeah. So
in the same page.
In the meantime, Mike's got that emergency authority, and if he needs to use it, he will.
Any other questions, Austin?
One other question. You mentioned on the LaSalle's about 22% were non-residents out of the permits last year. Was it the same on Book Cliffs and San Juan, or less?
Less, and the reason. So maybe just one other thing I should mention: the typical number of folks that have been choosing to hunt those, the average on the Book Cliffs and San Juan has been about 60, and so. So what we're trying to do is allow for enough permits for people. If they don't get their first choice on the LaSalle's, they could switch. The Book Cliffs specifically, we're worried. We're concerned that if a non-resident can't pursue on the LaSalle's, they may just go to one of these other two popular units. So if we put a limited entry scenario in place, we can then keep a 10% sub quota on those units as well.
And could we be double counting some of those guys? I mean, they could pick up an over-the-counter permit for all 3 units, right?
They could hunt multiple units, and we did look at that. So that's kind of in the mix. It's when you try to distill these numbers down, it gets complicated because people can hunt multiple units. What we did is we looked at anybody who said they either hunted the LaSalle's, at some point during the season, and there's a small number. A small percentage of folks we surveyed that hunt multiple units. Most of them go to one and stay there.
Thank you.
Gene?
It doesn't say in your presentation here whether these permits, if you place a number on them, whether it'll be draw or over the counter.
It'd be draw, yeah. It'd be the same system that we have for the summer restricted pursuit season, but there'd be a lot more permits available. There currently is a restricted pursuit season on those 3 units for the summer season. So we do it the same way.
Tammy.
Sorry, one more question. I forgot to. So I've been trying to keep track of the deer counts on the beaver as well. And so are you going to revisit that? Because last I heard, I don't know if...
I'm going to have to defer to an expert.
It's Mike here. I don't see Mike.
Yeah, either Teresa or Jason, I don't know.
And what is your specific question about the deer classification?
Well, just like what you revisited the plateau and the Boulder Kaparowitz because of the mule deer population and the decline in that you would up the permits on that. So considering, I'm asking that you consider that again, because the initial counts, I'm not sure if he's done with these tally or whatever on the beaver unit, but it sounds to me like the counts are down.
So you're talking the classification, the buck to doe and fawn ratios, or the overall population objective?
Just the overall population, if when that tally is finished, whatever, if you think that that's going to be worth up and permits on bears and lions. Same as what you've got your recommendation here on.
Yeah, and until we're still gathering that information. So if it came in that, say, our fawn survival was way down, then we may look at, I mean, if it's cougars or bears, we can always consider doing a predator management plan for the unit. And next week, around the 20th, 21st, 22nd of December, we are going to put some radio collars on the beaver unit on deer, so then we can we respond if there's a mortality, we respond immediately, and then we can determine if we've got coyotes, bears, lions, so that'll give us some more information. Does that kind of answer? Okay.
Any other questions from the RAC? Berlin?
I think I heard you say if we do limited entry, then there'd be a 2-year waiting period for.
Right. Yeah, there'd be a bonus point, a 2-year waiting period. Now, we are offering a lot of permits. If, for example, more people, if a lot of people are on a waiting period and it goes undersubscribed, then any remaining permits would go over the counter. And if you're on a waiting period, you can buy a permit over the counter. But this would be a little different than a lot of our limited entry hunts in that usually the interest outstrips the availability, and we'll have to see how that works out if we do this. So.
If there's no other questions from the RAC, we will now have the questions from those in attendance tonight. I would remind you to, this is a question portion. We will have the comment portion in a moment. Again, if you would like to make a comment and have not yet filled out a card, please do so. And you can hand that to the gentleman there, and we will bring that up. So if you have a question, please come up to the mic, state your name, and ask the question again. It is just the question portion, not the comment. Name and where you're from.
Brian Johnson from Enoch, Utah. Why did we pick the boulder to up those spot and stock tags? Just wondering why that unit specifically.
It's one that was there were concerns raised about it, especially after the deer hunt this year. We did ask all the other regions, you know, how do you feel about where you are with bear tags? Do you feel like you might like another opportunity to revisit that? And the boulder's one where we felt like we should take another look and increase.
So we had people that had a bad deer hunt, and we just asked if we could kill more bears, and the biologist like, yeah, we got more here.
Go ahead.
Is it because, and is it just one of those things that we're looking at trying to give some opportunity, and we said, hey, the boulders can handle the pressure, and the deer hunting was bad, so let's give it a shot.
Yeah, I'd say it was both. Okay. It was we looked at the pat. We haven't increased permits on the boulder for about 5 years. We did increase them last year, but it's primarily in that spot and stock hunt. So there was a little bit of opportunity within the plan to increase last year, and we felt like we could do it now because of those. And then again, this is just one part of a big puzzle. We don't have a lot of data on, you know, how significant bears are, how significant a problem bears are, but this is sort of, let's throw everything at it and see if what we can.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Jared Higgins, representing myself. I just have a question for Darren. I read an article said that there's a major spike in bear conflicts this year. Is that true?
I'm tempted to. There was an article about that. We did see more incidents, especially along the Wasatch Front, than we did last year, but it was less than it was the year before. It looks like we had a birth pulse somewhere in the last couple years, and most of these were young, dispersing male bears, 2-year-old bears. So we'll see how things go. We did have that, but typically when you know headlines and
I just wanted to know if that was true or if that was just something that somebody put out there.
It did. Yeah, we did see about a doubling over the year before, and the year before most of our incidences were actually in southeastern Utah with the drought. It was mainly agricultural stuff. So
my follow-up question to that is the division, ever since I've had hounds 20 years, their slogan has always been a fed bear is a
dead
bear. So with the addition of all these bait hunts, do you feel like that coincides with these spikes in problems, the bears becoming dependent on that food?
I don't think we have any strong evidence of that in the literature or anything else. I've heard that concern, and we do have regulations about how close you can be to campgrounds and waterways to try to prevent bears from being drawn into those conflict areas.
Yeah, I just think a bear, you know, after they eat on a bait so long, they'll wander around and maybe be more prone to come into to something like that. And that's been kind of Utah's stance on it for a long time until they introduced these hunts.
One good thing about the baiting opportunity, similar to hounds in that a hunter can look at a lot of different bears and be selective. And so so there's definitely that advantage. We are sensitive to that, and it's something that we could look at. You know, we've got a lot of collared bears now, and we can start detecting where they've been and maybe backtrack if we've got some problems.
Thank you.
So right now we're not seeing it.
Darren, can I add just a little bit to that? Most of the data on baiting bears and bears that are food conditioned, a bear becomes conditioned to a location, not to the type of food. And so they'll come back to the spot, not necessarily go looking for whatever they, whatever kind of food they found. So they do certainly become conditioned to that spot, and they'll come back for years after that if they've found food there.
Dustin Clark, Cedar City, Utah. Darren, do you have the numbers for the harvest percentage on the boulders for the last 5 years? Because everyone I've talked to said bear harvest and percentages were the worst last year.
I have them. I'll have to look them up.
Will you look them up so we can see them? I'm just curious on that.
So it kind of depends what...
just total numbers.
Overall, for all the hunts combined,
yes, ma'am.
It was 29%. Off the top of my head, it was 58% for the summer season. The spot and stock in the fall, the new one, was only 10%. Okay. But overall, for all the seasons combined, I can look it up for you.
What about the previous year?
It was 52%, so it was down quite a bit. Overall, it was 52% for 2018,
and
for all hunts combined.
And this last year's was?
29. And I think the addition of those 20 spot and stock, that did drag the average down a little bit.
I understand that, but I just am curious as to why we're raising it so many on a unit that's consistently going downhill. That's my question.
Liz Odell, I live just 5 miles across the border in Fredonia, so I do hunt Utah a lot. So my question is just in regards to raising the amount of bear kill tags in the boulder. Just curious, it kind of seems like what I'm hearing is that the deer population is going down, but nobody really knows why, so we're just going to kill more bears. That's what I hear. I mean, that's what it looks like. That's the, like, if I was going to make it at the most basic public perception, that's what it sounds like. So I'm just curious, though, is the concern for the deer population in regards to the potential for possibly needing to limit hunting opportunities until the deer numbers increase, or is the concern for the actual survival of the deer herd itself?
Let me address the bear part, and then maybe Teresa can talk about the deer stuff. So this is one of those instances where we don't have a lot of hard data on that unit, but we have seen on the book cliffs bears sort of targeting in on fawning areas.
I mean, I know they eat fawns, but
right, yeah.
There's so many other things.
And so what we're doing here is, you know, we're using our best professional judgment. We don't know that necessarily is the driving cause. You know, drought, I'm sure, has a lot to do with it too. But this is one thing we can do in addition to habitat work and some other things. So I don't know if Teresa wants to talk about deer strategies beyond that.
We are trying to gather additional information. We're out out there right now, the last few days, and then the next few days, we're putting 125 radio satellite collars on deer on the boulder. So then we'll better be able to detect what is going on with the population, whether we've got, again, coyotes, cougars, bears, you know, the timing of when we're losing a lot of these animals. So we are trying to do everything we can. We're working on a lot of habitat improvements also over there on the boulder. We've got a lot on the plate. So we are trying to do the best thing we can for the deer herds also.
All right, thank you. We will move on to the comment portion. We have quite a few comments. If you would like to, that would be great. I've got one, but again, on the comment portion, state your name, where you're from, who you're representing. You do have 3 minutes. If you're representing yourself, 5 minutes if you're representing an organization. I will read the first comment from Paige Anderson. In my 6 years of hunting, I've never been stopped and asked to show my pursuit tags, enforce what's already in place.
So Paige had indicated that she didn't want to come up, so.
All right. Our first comment will be from Brian Johnson. He will be followed by Casey Yardley.
Brian Johnson, Enoch, Utah. I'm representing Utah Archery Association for just a second. They would like to support the division's, just basically say, hey, we've got a 3-year plan, let's just stick to that, with the exception of the exhaustion rule. They're okay with that change. Now I'll take that hat off. Put the Brian Johnson hat on. I would like to ask the RAC to do the same thing that we've done for the last 5 years, and that is let's vote on this summer pursuit. Let's extend the season 2 weeks early and let those hunts overlap. I understand that there is a concern for conflict. That concern is that a houndsman will run off somebody's bait. If you don't want to bait early and have a houndsman run off your bait, don't do it. So it seems like a lot of rules that it's just a person, if he doesn't want to have a houndsman run off his bait, it doesn't matter. I've baited a lot, guys. I've baited in Idaho. I've been very vocal about this because I'm pretty passionate about it. And I've had hounds run off my bait, and it doesn't matter. The bears come back. It's okay. They just run through, they chase them around, and they come back. You guys are houndsmen, right? You guys have all ran off a bait before, and where does the bear go? It's an accident. The bear just comes back. It's conditioned to an area, not necessarily the food. So they're going to come back. As a guy who hunts over bait, it's not a big deal. Now, if the guy doesn't want to, he just chooses not to. All I'm saying is it's a win-win. If someone wants to hunt a little bit early and he's willing to take the chance, I just ask you to extend that hunt 2 weeks early. This RAC's asked for it, and we've passed it probably 5 or 6 years in a row. For the ranchers, Tammy, for the ranchers, it's a win-win. We can kill more bears. So, anyways, thank you.
Next is Casey Yardley and then Dustin Clark.
Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to address a little bit on the pursuit on the LaSalles. I think that I've hunted Idaho my whole life since I was a little kid, and doing that, I've always had to draw either a pursuit, which they call a hound hunter's permit, or I've had to be a licensed guide in that state. I've done it my whole life. My dad had a unit up there for 35 years. I think that we need to do something with the non-resident hunters. They need to have to draw that tag. Just it didn't affect me. I usually drew every other year, and if I didn't, then I hunted under a guide. But that's, I think that's important. I think that these non-residents should, if we're going to let them pursue in our state and come into our state, then they should have to draw a hound hunter's permit or you know, and I don't think that they should have the as many of them as the residents. And then another thing I wanted to touch on was the lions on the out on the Mineral Mountains. I know we just put the sheep out there, and I was born and raised in Beaver. I've hunted them mountains my whole life. But what we're doing right now is not right. They've got a 6 lion quota on that unit right now. Well, 4 of them lions, unless I'm wrong, I could be wrong, but 4 of them lions that they killed weren't even on the same unit as the sheep. They were out on the Bald Hills. They weren't even on the Mineral Mountains. So we need to put our heads together a little bit. If we're going to kill these lions, for hell's sakes, let's kill the right lions. You know, if you want 10 lions killed over there, I'm all for killing lions if they need to be killed. But right now, they're not. They're picking on the lions that aren't even the right cats. You know, so either split that unit that way, a Highway 21, and make it a different unit, or something. But something's got to be done, because the way we're managing it right now, it makes absolutely no sense. We killed 2 lions, maybe 3, but I think 2. Was it 3? They overkilled then. Okay, so 3 lions, and they put all that money into putting these sheep here. You know, for hell's sakes, let's think about it and let's do it right. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Dustin Clark and then Jared Higgins.
I agree with almost everything Casey said as far as the cougars on the Mineral Mountains and the sheep. My biggest concern is going with the big 3 pursuit per units. Why should we limit our residents when I can go over to the San Juan Mountains, camp for a week, and I will see more out-of-state trucks than I will in-state trucks. And those guys are out-of-staters that come in, camp 10 or 12 of them with 30, 40 dogs, and they run the mountain. And those are the ones I think that are causing the problems, not the residents. And if we do this pursuit permit on these units, it's not only going to hurt our residents, but also the outfitters. Outfitters that can't go train their dogs that live in those areas. So, I mean, to become an outfitter, to have good bear dogs, you've got to train. You can't just focus on, well, I have one client on the San Juan Mountain. I can go catch one bear and then I'm done. I have to travel 4 hours to go train my dogs. It doesn't seem fair to hurt our residents and our in-state outfitters. So, and, you know, I mean, I already addressed my issue with the Boulder tag with my questions, so that's as far as I want to go with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Jared Higgins and then Liz O'Dell.
Jared Higgins, and I'm representing the Utah Houndsman Association, and I'm just going to read this proposal. I apologize, I'm a better houndsman than a man or a reader, and I'm not even a very good houndsman, so bear with me. Respected RAC and Wildlife Board members, the Utah Houndsman Association supports the DWR's bear hunting recommendations, except the following changes. The UHA does not support the restricted pursuit spring season. We think that the dog limits are going to kind of cure up all the problems we've been having down there. It's more of a dog problem, you know, too many dogs, too many people. But by limiting that, we feel like that's going to kind of clear up on its own. The UHA does not support any tag increase because of the 3-year cycle. You know, we voted in this cycle. Let's see it through. Let's see where it ends up and increase them in 3 years when we're supposed to. We'd like to thank Darren and the DWR for the willingness to meet with the UAH regarding this year's bear recommendations. The UHA would also like to thank those that serve on the board. We are grateful to have our voice heard in the input process. Thank you for reading and considering this proposal.
Thank you. Liz, and then Wade Hollerman.
Liz O'Dell, Fredonia. I came to Arizona from a state where we pretty much lost all our hounding, and I can tell you it kind of sucks to have to keep moving to run your dogs. So I may not be a resident of the state, but that's only by about a few miles being living in Fredonia. Seems to me that the idea of prohibiting out-of-state houndsmen from drawing a pursuit tag as a solution to the current problem is wrong. I don't believe it will solve anything, and it's a false solution. I've heard people say it isn't fair out-of-state hunters can get any of these tags, but if we're doing things by fairness, then tags should be given to the people actually residing in those unit areas first and drawn for everyone else afterwards. If we were doing things by fairness, then all other states would also begin limiting out-of-state hunters as well. What I see is that the current problems could be solved by simply enforcing the current laws. People are already piggybacking on others' pursuit tags, including the summer draw pursuit, and that simply needs to stop. It's not just non-residents doing this. The already existing rules regarding camping limits and camping with animals, as well as special use permits, should be enforced, and doing so would also solve a great bit of this current issue. I think the idea of needing to pass an ethics course before drawing a pursuit tag is a great idea. I would say it's possibly would be a good requirement for obtaining any pursuit tag. If a person passes the course and knows the rules and understands the idea of the ethics we need to promote to save this opportunity now and for the future, then they have absolutely zero excuse for doing the wrong thing afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Wade, and then Garth Jensen.
Hi, my name's Wade Hollerman. I'm from Cedar. Sorry. I'm a second-generation houndsman and an avid houndsman at that. I've been an avid houndsman for 21 years, and I've been an outfitter in the state of Utah for 9. Hounds are not only my passion, but they're my way of life. I am here today to state my concerns on the recommended changes. I will start by saying within the 21 years of having hounds, I have hunted or pursued bears on the LaSalles every single year, which have had zero conflicts of any kind with any other houndsmen, hikers, bikers, or any other recreating on the LaSalles. Also, with those 21 years, I camp with 2 non-residents every single year who have hunted the LaSalles since 1990. In the past 10 years, I have spent 20-plus consecutive days in the spring pursuit on the LaSalles. Again, with all my time spent those 20-plus days, I have not heard nor seen any conflicts. To my knowledge, there hasn't been any previous complaints until the last year. Memorial weekend of 2019, 20 officers were what we were called doing a training day on the LaSalles. And this is one of the busiest weekends of all recreation on all big 3. And to my knowledge, the only tickets that were wrote were a couple of trespassing tickets where a group of hounds had treed a bear on some private property and went and retrieved their dogs and got a ticket trespassing, retrieving their dogs, and a tobacco ticket. I feel if there were any conflicts with any other hunters or any other recreational users, there would have been some problems on this weekend. And I would hope if there was conflict, the person or persons it would be that were involved would be reprimanded, not the houndsmen as a whole population. When I hunt on the LaSalles or any of the other big 3 units, if I stay for 25 consecutive days, I will catch at least 20 bears. In my opinion, this shows there are plenty of bears and room for everyone else. During the weekdays, I see a limited amount of houndsmen. I can usually pursue multiple areas of the mountain. This is not the same on the weekends. It means I will just hunt in a harder area to avoid what I call the Utah weekend warriors. I believe this is where most of the complaints are coming from. I personally believe the complaints are sour houndsmen complaining about other houndsmen that are getting out hunted. Another change that's been discussed is a 16-dog bear limit in camp and on a bear. For me, this is a hard pill to swallow because not every dog in camp gets hunted every single day. Some dogs can only hunt a couple days, some can hunt the whole time you're there, so we rotate through them. And then also, while they're pursuing a bear, it's a gray area, because if I start a bear and put 16 dogs on a bear, and in the next
Going to have to ask you to wrap it up, Wade.
Okay. And anyways, if they cross the road and I only have 12, didn't you say I had 5 minutes? Is 5 minutes? Didn't I have 5 minutes?
Three.
Anyways, there's, me all jacked up now. Anyways, there's not, and I only have 12. Can I put four more dogs with those 12 while the other four, they're not on the bear anymore. They are behind now. With our GPS, we can tell that. And another thing I wanted to say is that the numbers, they have 75 non-residents and it would be 7 non-residents and an 88% average, but so those numbers don't match up, and I just think it needs to, I'm trying to jump through this now. I'll just finish. As you can see, these numbers do not match and would not give everyone the opportunity to obtain a tag like the division believes. These numbers, if they go to a draw plus a waiting period, we would mimic the summer pursuit. I have personally only drawn the summer pursuit season one time in 9 years, and I do not want to see the spring pursuit go down the same path as the summer. If we were to draw, each houndsman would put in multiple times, flooding the system and making it even longer, and limiting the dogs and limiting hunters on the mountain. Haven't been with no serious problem, I believe, is an anti-hound and anti-hunting move. If it passes, it's a stepping stone going downhill, over-regulating hound hunting through the fall of the footsteps of other states that have lost all hound hunting together.
Thanks, Wade. All right, Garth Jensen, and then Bryce Pilling.
Well, I'm not a houndsman. I don't claim to be, but I could really echo a lot of the sentiments that Wade just stated right there. What I saw in this proposal was over-regulation, in my opinion, to what already is, you know, rules on the books that probably could be enforced and solve a lot of these problems. Anytime that I hear more regulations coming in on houndsmen, it just makes me cringe a little bit, because it just seems like a step towards pulling back, and then we get into the state where we have in Colorado or other states like that where they've outlawed hound hunting. And now they've got an overpopulation of bears, and they can't take care of that problem because they no longer have the ability to run hounds and effectively take those bears. So, and then the other regulation that kind of had me concerned was the exhaustion. I haven't heard anyone else really touch on it very much, but it seems like an awful gray area for a law to say past the point of exhaustion, because in theory what you're trying to do is run that animal until you can get him exhausted enough to go up a tree, go in a cave, bay up, whatever. Hopefully they would use some good judgment in going forth with this rule if it passes, or, you know, enforcing that law. But it just seems like there's a few too many regulations being put in place where if they already enforced some of the laws that are already in place, it would probably solve the problem.
Thank you. Bryce, and then he'll be followed by Scott Stubbs.
Thanks, Riley. Bryce Pilling, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's recommendation with one exception, and that's for limiting the springtime pursuit. I'd like to thank Darren for all his work. Thank you.
Thanks, Bryce. Scott, and then our last one will be Garth Carter.
Scott Stubbs, Well Grower. I support... When I talk to all of my neighbors in this business, we're just having a lot more conflict with bears. So I definitely support, if there's any way to increase the pursuit, to try and keep them stirred up a little, see if that'd keep them off of us, and any more harvesting we could do, because we're definitely having more conflict with bears. Thank you.
I've always thought if I had to pick a group of people that knew what was going on in the field, I'd pick a houndsman. When I worked for the division for 20 years and I ever had questions about the local wildlife that I was managing, I'd pick up the phone and call a houndsman. Next guy I'd call would be a trapper. So I have deep respect for the houndsman. And what I'm going to recommend is no slight towards them, but it's a fear I have that we're running out of deer. And I have this fear right now that what I'm seeing on the winter range, and as I call all the other sportsmen I know around southern Utah, and I'm hearing the same thing, we've got 10% of normal on the winter range, it scares the heck out of me. And with that in mind, I'm going to recommend, and I hope that somebody on the RAC will recommend this so you can vote on it and it will be on the record. I'm going to recommend an unlimited tags for southern Utah for bears. I'm going to recommend an unlimited tags for southern Utah for lions. And I'm going to recommend a 365-day season. And this is not an unusual season. Nevada has it. Arizona has it. Colorado just went to unlimited bear tags this fall. And I think we need to. I think we need this. We're not going to eliminate the bears. We're not going to eliminate the lions. And I think we need this as a safeguard till we can figure out what's happening with our deer. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you guys being here and the effort that you put forward. I know it's not easy. I know you're being pulled at from every side. And thank you.
Thank you, Garth. Thank you to all those who had comments. I will ask Kevin if he will kind of summarize the comments. Also, many of you may have been participants in this, but I know the RAC received many emails. We did send out surveys just as we did with the previous RAC with the deer management plan, and so we do have that information as well. We'll ask Kevin to summarize that also.
Okay. Utah Archery Association doesn't support making changes outside the three-year cycle, except they do support the exhaustion rule change as it was presented. We heard an ask to begin the baiting season 2 weeks earlier, which would create an overlap with the hound season. We've heard both support for limiting non-residents and not support for limiting non-residents. We've heard comments on both sides of that issue. There's comments to not limit the pursuit permits on the three units from both the Houndsman Association and from SFW and from some individuals. We have heard support for requiring the ethics course for both pursuit and for hunting. And then an ask for unlimited tags for bears and lions with a year-round season for both. I think that covers most of it.
And the online, do you have that information?
Sorry. Yes, the online comments that we received on this one, first from a statewide basis, there was 58% of the people that watched the presentation online expressed support for the proposal from Darren. 33% opposed the recommendation, and 8% were neutral. Specifically from the southern region, we had 33% support, 61% did not support, and 6% neutral. And we had far fewer comments this time. We had 12 people comment online, whereas in the last rec we had about 75. So.
Thanks, Kevin. I will now open it up to the RAC for comments.
Or maybe a motion.
Go ahead, Austin.
I'll make a comment. Many of you know I'm a proponent for guys getting tags and everybody having an opportunity, but as we just finished a lengthy meeting here last month about opportunity and we need more animals so we can hunt more, I see a restricted spring pursuit season as a cut in opportunity to many of, I'll say, Utah's longest residents and those that enjoy the landscape the most. So I think it would be wrong of us to approve a restriction on residents especially. I think we could come up with a non-resident draw or limited entry system for non-residents, and we could base it off of a 10% cap based off a three-year past average of how many spring pursuit permits were sold or something like that. But I don't think we're to the point where we need to cut these permits back. I understand the recommendation was for 75, which, yes, at face value, that says there's enough tags for everyone. But we know how draw systems work and all the ways that people will use their friends and family members and everyone who's ever touched a dog to put in for a permit and screw the system up, and now we're in a mess. So I think we have to do away with the implementation for the resident pursuit limited entry draw. That's my comment to the RAC here.
Thank you, Austin. Other comments from the RAC? Go ahead.
Yeah, obviously the San Juans are on the forest they represent, but I only get a lot of people on the landscape early in the spring. It's pretty hard on the infrastructure, especially roads. I imagine some of these issues are probably what generated some of these complaints, but you know, we appreciate the Division of Wildlife for addressing those and for giving this plan out. But there's some hard decisions that are gonna have to be made. You know, if it gets to the road damage is severe enough, we'd hate to close anything. You know, a lot of times we don't have gated roads that we can't open until they dry up anyway. And that's one of the concerns I have, I guess, with Brian's proposal to open it 2 weeks early. As long as people, I guess, know that, they might have to have restricted access at that time, depending on the conditions. I guess that's probably okay. But I guess it's a tough, obviously a tough issue, and we tend to vote on in favor of opportunity. But in this case, we're supporting the division's recommendation. Unless, you know, somebody else, I heard a lot of, I understand people don't want that, lose that opportunity, but I also didn't hear any solutions to some of the resource problems that they've been experiencing.
Thanks, Sean. Any other comments? Berlin?
I understand the problem with the roads and stuff and spring and that, and I don't think it's the houndsmen or the bear lion producers that really cause the problem. It's the shed hunters. From the livestock point of view, and from being on the ground and living, making a living off of it, there is too many bear and lion out there, and there wouldn't be anything wrong with what was commented earlier from the public about an unlimited bear and lion tag and then 365-day season. I think that's something that sooner or later is going to have to take some consideration, because these bear and lion have, these houndsmen are the only thing that regulates them, and they're not real good at it in my point of view, because they let the ones go that may be doing the killing of the livestock, and everybody's excited about killing these lions that are after these bighorn sheep. But you have a lion or a bear kill a domestic sheep, and it's like pulling teeth to make sure you get the right one. When you guys jump on the bandwagon and kill three or four, I'm all for it, but it ought to work the same way on domestic. But I think we're going to pretty soon be to the point where, with the lion and bear population out there, and I'm coming off the Boulder Mountain, the Fish Lake and the Thousand Lake and that area, and the Henrys, we need to figure out a way to get the numbers down, and this would be a good way to do it.
I know you're waiting, Tammy. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm biding my time. I think everybody had a lot of valuable things to say. The best thing I heard was Garth's proposal. As far as I'm concerned, unlimited number on the Lions and the Bears, and I'd support that. And I'd like to make that motion. That's just one line item, though.
Well, I'll wait a moment. We still have a couple of comments. I'll wait a moment before we make that motion. Nick?
I just wanted to mention that I really appreciated all the inline comments this year. It gave us a lot to consider. Gave us a lot of time to think about it before we ever get to this meeting. Hopefully that means we make some more intelligent decisions. From what I'm hearing, and I'm not the expert on this, but this is my own personal opinion, I think regardless of which side of this that you fall on, we should all be, you know, out to pursue the same thing. But I hear a lot of emotion that seems to govern somebody's opinion, whether it be Houndsman, somebody that would like to see, you know, an open season. I don't know how much science we can really have on it, but I think that DWR does as good a job as anybody in terms of trying to decide what we ought to do, and I don't think we should overreact and just open season on Bear for 365 days. Sorry, Vernon. But there's so many things that I keep hearing that affect, you know, predators, animals that are killed, domestic animals that are attacked. But there's so many reasons why that must be, and I think one of them is, you know, we mentioned we had a bad year. We had a dry, dry summer, and we had a, you know, not a great winter. Weather has a lot to do it, and then predators is a big issue that's being talked about here tonight. But yes, I know they're there, and yes, I agree with, you know, the fact that they've killed things that hopefully don't, that we don't, that we don't want killed. But I just wish there was a way to get around some of the emotion, and that's hard depending on your position, but and come up with something other than, you know, this upsets me, so we should do this. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but that's what I keep hearing, so thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments from the rec? Berlin?
This online stuff is good. It plugs up my email. I have to spend a little more time deleting stuff, but to me, it's interesting that statewide you got a 58% support, 33 opposed. When you get to the southern region, it's just the opposite. And I think we need to take that into account, because the other RACs meet, and I don't know. I haven't got time to go to all of those or try to figure out what they talked about, but on Southern Region, 33% supported it, 61% opposed this plan. And I'm not sure what the demographics of the people that get online and watch this video is. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm not too computer savvy, so I probably wouldn't be able to find it anyway. But of the people that have got on and did it, 61 opposed it, 61%, and I think we need to take that into account. Thanks.
Thanks, Verlin. I just have one comment from me as a representative of sportsmen. As a sportsman, I represent all sportsmen. Houndsmen are sportsmen. Sometimes I think that we cross, make this division and put this line in the ground, and that's not accurate. And so I do think that there is an issue in the state with predation. There absolutely is. I think that our fawning areas, our calving areas for our herds, I think they are suffering. I think we have a lot of biological impacts from the droughts over the last few years and the winters that have definitely impacted a lot of our herds as well. But it would be very hypocritical for me as a sportsman to put any more value on a deer as a houndsman would on a bear or a lion. And I would hope that we just take that into consideration as we're making our motions this evening. Again, I'm not saying one way or the other that I support or don't support anything that have been said tonight. And luckily, I don't have a vote tonight as I get to act as chair. That being said, I would hope that the RAC would remember and take that into consideration as you're making your motions and casting your vote this evening. At this point, I would entertain a motion.
I'll take a stab at this. I'd like to make a motion that we go through a year-round hunt on bears and coos. Of course, bears won't be year-round because they're hibernating for 2 or 3 months, whatever, 4 months, however long they hibernate. But anyway, and the two-week that Brian asked for on the 2 weeks overlap on the spring and fall hunts. The spring hunt on bait and pursue. Anyway, I'll make that motion.
I would recommend you break that into two different motions, Craig.
Okay, that's fine.
So let's look at the first one.
So the first motion, Craig, is to allow year-round hunting on bears and cougars without any limits on tags. Yep.
I'll second.
We have a motion and we have a second. Is there any discussion on that motion?
I'll just add a little bit to that. And the reason I say that is we've had the $50 deal on coyotes for, I don't know, 3 years or 4 years, whatever it is, five, I don't know how long. We're still having trouble with coyotes. We haven't killed all the coyotes, even with the higher bounty. The coyotes are gotten harder to get because they've got smarter, but they're still there. And I think I agree with Garth that we can't kill all the bears and the cougars. They'll get smart.
Go ahead, Austin.
My input to this discussion would be. I am a proponent for, more opportunity, as I've spoke about, and I think this is something that we could look into in the future, but if I understand it correctly, we are in this three-year plan, and this would not be the time to necessarily abolish the entire guidebook for cougar and bear. Is that correct? I'm new to this, if you will. And someone help me out there.
Certainly that proposal would be outside of both the bear and cougar plans, but it is a motion that's on the table. So.
Any other discussion on the motion? Vernon.
We've been talking about this for several years, and when it comes up to when we talk about the bear and the lion and you ask Darren how many we have, it's based on some formula, and basically they don't know how many we have in Utah. And I mean, they've got their best guess, and that's all it is, and it's low. It's a low number from what there is out there. And yeah, I think even doing an unlimited tags and year-round hunt, you won't kill all the bear and lion. And like Craig said, it hasn't worked on the
on the coyotes. And, you know, the deer herd has got, I mean, they winter kill. We've got to deal with that through management. And these predators, they don't winter kill. They have very few. They have nothing that attacks them unless it's each other. The lions will do a little bit of that, and probably the bears too. But as it is, their population's getting too big, and it needs to be managed. And this is one way we could try it. We talked about the incidents of bear contact, and yeah, it's on the ones that you read about are on the Wasatch Front, but it's happening to us down here all the time. Used to never see a bear, now you'll be out riding and you'll see one or two a summer riding in the middle of the day. And so this motion that Craig's done is something that would maybe make a difference there. And I think we ought to pass it and at least send it up to the RAC to let them know that it's a concern and possibly a way to make a difference on this. Thank you.
Other comments? Go ahead, Nick.
I don't know, to make that jump to year-round seems pretty extreme all at once. And like Verlin says, we don't know how many bears, how many lions are out there. So how can we make a decision one way or the other that's that extreme until we have a little better idea? So to me, it's just almost, and I understand the concerns of the ranchers and the farmers. I do. But from a non-consumptive point of view, that's an awful big switch. I can't support it, so.
Go ahead, Austin.
I'll just say real quick, a charge, I guess, to us as RAC members and to all the sportsmen that I hope we all intend to hold the division's feet to the fire, if you will, on surveys and counts and on accuracy as good as we can get. And I commend them for using technology and everything they're doing. But I think we are all expecting more transparency on predator numbers, on deer numbers, and make some changes in short order. And I think these meetings coming up with deer numbers and bucks and bulls are going to be very interesting and very telling if they're doing what they say they're going to do. And I look forward to that as we discuss predators and other species.
And I guess my comment would be, I've been to quite a few of these meetings, and it seems like the southern region is notorious for just throwing stuff out there and hoping that it makes its way up. We've actually got a pretty good reputation for that. My concern with that is we've got a lot of smart individuals that have spent a lot of time and made... we're not as bad off as we think we are on everything. I am not a doom and gloomer on anything. I'm a realist. I'm not a pessimist. I'm not an optimist. And the reality is our herds are struggling right now. There's no question about that. But to be able to support a motion just off the cuff, I can't do that without a lot more information. And nor do, even though I think that it's something that needs to be addressed and that we, and I failed to recognize one of our board members, he showed up before, so we appreciate you being here. Even if this did make it up to them, I think there are different ways to get their attention to let them know that we've got some concerns rather than throwing out a motion that really isn't on the agenda. Again, that's the RACs. It's your decision to do that, and you can make that. But I don't get a vote tonight, but I could not support that motion that's present. That being said, if there's no more discussion on the motion, we do have a motion and a second. We would call for a vote. All those in favor? Those opposed? Vote fails. Motion fails. I would entertain another motion.
Do you want to go with the second one on the extended, the 2 week hunt?
Yep.
Make that motion then.
So the motion there is to.
I want to make sure we're clear. So it already overlaps a week between spring and summer.
There's already an overlap.
Are we talking one more week earlier? Are we talking 3 weeks overlap? Just
1 week earlier is what it's been in the past. So 2 weeks of overlap between. So the motion is to open the summer season 2 week or 1 week earlier. That will allow for 2 weeks of overlap between the spring and summer seasons. Is that your motion, Craig?
All right, we have the motion.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Tammy. Any discussion on that one? All right, we'll call for a vote. All in favor?
You get to vote this time.
And those opposed?
Mr. Chairman, you get to break that.
Great. And the chairman opposes.
So it fails.
Motion fails.
5-4. Is that right? 5-4.
All right, we're back at square one. I'd entertain another motion on this agenda item. Austin, go ahead.
All right. So I'll make a motion to accept the division's recommendations for the black bear and cougar rules in pursuit, with the exception to only implement a non-resident restricted spring pursuit season for the LaSalle, San Juan, and Book Cliffs, with a tag quota set at 10% of the 3-year average of permits sold or permits used on that unit.
Give me a minute.
And once Kevin gets this, we may ask you just to clarify again so that everybody in the rack is clear of what the motion is.
With tags, so did you say tags set how, Austin? Based on?
The tag quota set at 10% of the 3-year historic average. Because how I understand it, Darren, is we have the numbers of how many pursuit permit holders claim that they hunted in that unit, correct?
Yeah, we could get at that. That's something we could do, sure. There are some legal and logistical concerns, but go ahead and vote how the RAC wants to vote. We'll see.
With running a non-resident only limited entry.
There's a couple of things. I don't know if this necessarily would affect your vote, but we need to be, when we do things that are unprecedented, we do open ourselves up to some legal concerns in terms of non-resident hunters feeling like they're being treated unfairly. And one of the reasons we recommended what we recommended is because it's something that we currently do. But what you're posing is not something we couldn't logistically do. There's some licensing things we'd have to work through too, but I think you're okay.
It would just remain over the counter for residents.
Right. We just essentially would be setting up a non-resident only draw, which again is unprecedented, but it's not logistically impossible. So.
Are you there, Kevin?
I think so. So the motion is to accept the recommendations with the exception of only implementing limited entry for non-residents on the LaSalle, San Juan, and Book non-resident implementing limited entry pursuit, or spring pursuit to be specific, right? For non-residents on the LaSalle, San Juan, and Book Cliffs units with tags set based on 10% of the three-year average of the total pursuit on the three units, and for pursuit to remain over the counter for residents.
Yes.
Pursuit permits.
All right, do we have a second on that? It's going to be a long night. If no second, the motion fails for a lack of a second.
Okay, I don't have to get it completely right then.
All right, I would entertain a motion.
Would you entertain a question to Kevin?
I'm always open for questions, Tammy.
Okay. On our the online support and whatever, and considering the comments and that were here today, 61% were against the proposal. Is there certain aspects as far as that goes, other than what was voiced here today, that they were specifically against, or it was just in general?
Okay.
Because I think that's where the crux of the problem is.
Let me clarify. I think I led you astray. So on it.
That wouldn't be the first time.
Okay. No, that's right. So it wasn't any more specific than just the whole presentation. We'd have to go into the individual comments to discern what part of it they didn't support. I didn't print out the comments, so I can't give you a sense of that right now. But yes, it was 61% opposed, 33% support, and 6% stayed on the fence and were neutral. And that's for the southern region, compared to, on a statewide basis, it was just about the opposite of that. It was 58% support and 33% oppose.
If I might comment on that, Tammy, maybe this will help, but I would submit that the majority of the emails that we all received were probably much similar to what we heard this evening, and the main concern was that on the San Juan, the LaSalle, the same concerns that we've heard this evening.
That's just what I was going to say. That's what I remember. I didn't try and take a tally or whatever. So I think a lot of the concerns that I can see are the increase on Plateau and the Caparo. So I think that's, 30 additional spot and stock. Those are kind of questions there.
You know what, Tammy? I told you backwards.
How many times are you going to change your story?
This is new to me, this whole online thing. I've got to... Statewide, it was 60% opposed and 33% supported. In the southern region, it was 60% supported and 33% opposed. I gave you the numbers backwards. My apologies.
I do hope that with those new numbers that we can propose a motion.
You don't need another smart aleck remark on record, right?
No, emotions is what we're after.
Gene?
I'll try one. That we accept the division proposal with the exception that we do not put limits on the pursuit on the San Juan, LaSalle, and Bookcliff units.
It's fairly straightforward. Do we have a second?
Okay.
I'll second that.
And we do have a second from Austin. We have a motion. Would you read that motion back for us, Kevin?
So they accept the proposal with the exception of limiting summer pursuit on the or spring pursuit on the Bookcliff, San Juan, and LaSalle units.
We have a motion and a second. Would call for a vote. All right, Verlin.
So does that will that make those tags unlimited then?
Yes, that would make that would keep it as it is now on those three units with unlimited spring pursuit for both residents and non-residents. Is that correct, Darren?
All right.
Austin.
Just continued discussion. I think in answer to that, we're also passing all the other changes, the 16-dog limit. We understand that Forest Service and CITLA are going to enforce their camp restrictions hopefully a little bit better. So there's other things that are being passed to hopefully subside some of the problems that were being reported in that portion of the state, even though we have this exception to keep it as is for the number of permits.
Thank you. Tammy.
I would support that if we also added the Beaver West unit as an unlimited. No, I know pursuit. I'm talking about kill tags.
And this is particular is the pursuit.
This is pursuit.
The motion was for the overall presentation. So this would end the discussion on this
correct
item.
All right, time for a vote. All in favor?
Could you please read that again to me, that what motion we're voting on?
So the motion is to accept the proposal with one exception, to not limit spring pursuit on the Bookcliff, San Juan, and LaSalle units. Everything else in the proposal is
as is
being supported, yes.
All right, now I will call for a vote. All in favor? And those opposed? The motion carries. All right, we will move on to agenda item 6, the Wolf Management Plan, and I believe Darren is going to do this one for us as well.
Yeah, I drew the short straw. Before all the houndsmen leave, I just want to thank everybody for coming and letting us know how you feel. Thanks a lot. So normally Kim Hersey is our, what do they call him, so Native Wildlife Program Coordinator for Mammals, and so she would do this, but her husband Kent is helping us catch deer, and it was hard for them both to be gone. So I'll present this. I'll try my best to answer any questions that folks have, and Kevin's got a lot of background here too, so hopefully between the two of us we can answer any questions that may come up. What we're asking for tonight, I guess just quickly to give some background, the current status of wolves in Utah is that they're delisted in a small portion of the state in northern Utah, basically north of I-80. Outside of that area in the southern part of the state, they're still protected under the Endangered Species Act, and management falls to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The state legislature has passed a law that directs the Division of Wildlife Resources as to how we are to react to wolves that find their way into the state. First of all, we are to prevent establishment of wolves in any delisted areas of Utah until the entire state is delisted. And secondly, we're to require that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service remove any wolves found in a portion of Utah that's listed where they're listed until the entire state is delisted. Wolves are, as some of you may know, currently proposed for delisting range-wide, so that would be across the United States. And the way that our wolf plan works is it would not take full effect until, wouldn't take any effect until wolves are delisted within the whole state. Just quickly on some background on wolves. First of all, we've confirmed between 15 and 20 individual wolves within the last 15 years have made their way into Utah. They've almost all been in counties bordering Wyoming and Idaho. We haven't seen any evidence of any breeding going on. We haven't seen any packs or pups yet. These seem to be dispersing individuals or sometimes pairs, but we haven't detected any dens or reproduction. The Utah does have a wolf management plan. We initially passed that plan in 2005, and it was a 10-year plan. We asked for a 5-year extension in 2015, and again, this plan has never been implemented because wolves are still have federal protection in part of the state. They haven't been delisted in the state yet. What we're recommending tonight, in order to have a plan in place, so the plan expires. We're recommending tonight that we extend the Utah Wolf Management Plan for another 10 years. The purpose of the plan is to guide management for statewide delisting and the establishment of wolves in Utah, or until assumption of the plan change, so political, social, biological, or legal. So if things change on the ground, we would make changes to the plan. And established means at least 2 breeding pairs of wild wolves successfully raising at least 2 young each until December 31st of the year of their birth for 2 consecutive years. It's defined in the plan. A little background on the plan. This is a pretty big effort. You know, our plans are always bringing a whole bunch of people together, but this was unusual in that we actually had a third-party facilitator for this plan. It was a pretty rigorous process. The Wolf Working Group could convene any time during this next 10-year period at the direction of the DWR director. So if we needed to get in and make changes, the director could direct us to do that. And during the interim period, any wolves will be studied to determine where they're most likely to settle without conflict. So that would be if the plan goes into effect from the period that it goes into effect to the point where we see an established pack, we'll monitor any wolves that arrive. That's it.
Thank you, Darren. Questions from the RAC? Verlin?
I'm taking Tammy's smart-ass approach. So that last sentence on the last slide, where they most likely settle without conflict, where's that?
That's a good question. Yeah. Right, so the plan recognizes, that's a component, that there would have to be no conflicts. So
that's with wildlife too, right? According to the plan, the way I read it, it's conflict.
It takes all those things into
wildlife. Wildlife.
Correct.
Okay.
Hey, Darren, could you and I talked just briefly before the meeting. Could you tell the rest of the RAC what the reason for the plan is? I know that the plan purpose is there, but could you explain that little bit so that they understand why we have the plan and the delisting and how that affects?
Yeah, one of the things that Riley and I talked about before is in order to see a delisting, states have to have a plan in place. If we don't have any kind of regulatory strategy, that actually hurts our case in terms of delisting. So it's necessary to have a current plan. So again, that's why we're asking to renew it.
Thank you.
So, question, if I understand this right, the only thing is delisted is above I-80, right? So it's just a small portion of the
state. Right, yeah, it's the actual delisting area is bigger than that, but for Utah, that is just a portion.
It goes from I-80 down to I-15 and up I-15 to I-84 and out up to Idaho. So it's essentially Rich County, a little bit of Summit and Wasatch counties, and a little bit of Box Elder and Cache counties.
Okay. And then outside of the area, wolves are still protected, but DWR is going to be removing any of those that they find?
We will request that the Fish and Wildlife Service remove.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
So the way that works, Tammy, because I lived this for the first 10 years of my career.
That's right.
When we have a wolf that comes in, we write a letter to the Fish and Wildlife saying, come and get it, and they write a letter back saying no. And that's the way it's worked. But we haven't had any establishment, so.
So you don't call your friends in Beaver County?
What's that?
You don't call your friends in Beaver County?
All right. Any other questions from the RAC? Gene?
So this is the plan. What you've got here is a legal requirement, and we don't have a problem. We've just got something that will give us an opportunity to organize once we get a problem. Is that what
right.
we've got?
You know, I think it's a good plan, but at this point, until wolves are delisted, this is kind of a formality, just extending it. It's expired. We need to extend it.
Yeah, this plan's been on the shelf for 15 years, waiting for wolves to be delisted. All we're asking is that we can keep it back on the shelf for another 10 in case they are delisted during that time, and then it will be implemented.
Vernon?
So that area of Utah that is delisted, this plan is in place, in effect?
No, because the state legislature the state legislature has directed the division until they're delisted in all of the entire state that we will ask for wolves to be removed from the state.
And we have the authority to prevent establishment in that area where it's delisted right now, Berlin.
Right.
All right, we will have any questions from those in attendance?
Do we need to have a card to ask?
Not to ask a question. Just state your name and where you're from. We do have some comment cards if you're going to make a comment at a later time.
Thank you. I have a comment card. My question is, I'm still confused on the delisting issue. Delisting means that they have been established in the state?
No, so delisting is a federal action, and as far as I know, Kevin, they've met all of their recovery goals, and so their wolves are on the list to be delisted, but obviously this has been tried many times, and it seems to get tied up.
Yeah. Listing and delisting is a reference to the Endangered Species Act, which
right.
is a federal law.
Right.
So now they are listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. Delisting would remove them from the Endangered Species Act and give management authority back to the state of Utah.
Correct. And in order for that to happen, there would have to be a population of wolves in the state so that they're no longer considered endangered in the state. Is that correct?
No, because they don't look at it on a state-by-state basis. They look at it as range-wide for wolves as a species, not wolves in Utah.
Okay. Right. Oh, that's good to know. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. We do have... All right, we do have just the one comment card, and that's from Robert Tate.
That would be me.
All right. You've got 3 minutes, Robert.
I probably have gained most of the information that I need. My interest in commenting in Tonight's meeting stems from my experience in a recent elk hunting trip. At considerable expense, myself and two friends were transported by horse back into a drop camp in the Wood River Drainage in South Central Idaho. Past success with a local outfitter and a reputation of the area guided our decision as to where to go. After 4 days of hiking, glassing, and waiting at wallows, I had seen more wolves than I did elk, deer, or moose. On the third day of the hunt, a pack of six wolves trotted past the wallow where the three of us were hidden. The next day, we ran into a local hunter who had hunted this drainage for a number of years. He described how, on his last hunt into the area in 2017, as he hiked the ridges, he would glass on any given day 30 to 40 mature bulls. The minute we told him we had seen wolves, he said, "That's it. I'm out of here." He proceeded to tell us of other areas he had hunted where the introduction of wolves had decimated or driven the elk out. He cited the numbers of outfitters who had been driven out of the business due to the problem. My father was a sheep rancher who was plagued year after year by predation from coyotes and cougars, not so much wolves because there were few wolves around at the time. I may have seen the last wolf killed in the North Fork drainage of southern Utah when a cousin showed up in the mid-40s with a dead wolf hanging from the rack of his truck. I was probably 10 years old at the time, and I saw how happy my father was when he saw the animal. I saw firsthand the effect predation had on my father's livelihood. When I first saw the agenda for this meeting, my original thought was to collect and cite research on the effect of wolf packs on populations of deer, elk, and moose, and then I read the updated June 15, 2019 contract report to the DWDR by Big Game Forever, and I think you referenced that. Is that correct, that a contractor had worked with you in developing the wolf plan?
No, that's a separate issue. That's a lobbyist that the legislature has hired to lobby back in Congress, not part of this.
Oh, plan. I see. Okay. That's on the DWR website, and I would recommend that anybody that's interested in this issue read that plan, that article. It's extremely research-based and well put together. I love being in the outdoors and viewing wildlife as much as I enjoy the hunt. It was amazing to see that pack of wolves in the wilds in Idaho. However, that experience did not change my passion to preserve deer and elk hunting for my posterity. I probably can go on record as believing that the only good wolf in deer and elk country is a dead wolf, but I realize I'm not the only person in today's diverse society, as I stated earlier, to have a dog in this fight. Hopefully we can avoid the mistakes that have been made by other Western states before the already fragile elk population is decimated. Thank you for your time. And I'm citing information from this study, the effects of the wolf population on big game animals in Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and Montana.
Thank you. That was well prepared. That was exactly 3 minutes. All right, if there are no other comments from the audience, any comments from the RAC? Gene.
I have a question I forgot to ask. Is there any threat to the southeast of Utah from the Mexican wolf?
Do you want to talk? You probably know more. Kevin probably knows more about that issue than me. So.
Yeah, I represented Utah along with Marty Bushman from our Attorney General's office in a group that the Fish and Wildlife Service put together to create a management plan or a recovery plan for the Mexican wolves. My marching orders in participating on that plan was to make sure that Mexican wolves were not recovered in the state of Utah because they're not native. Their native range does not extend into Utah. We were successful in our charge there. The recovery plan keeps them within the range of the historic range of Mexican wolves, which runs up to about I-40 if you're familiar with Arizona and south of there. And so there is no recovery efforts or quotas or anything for Mexican wolves in the state of Utah.
This is one I think that most of us, I mean, we may think we have different issues with which we do. With predation, wild horses, invasive species, but wolves is one I think we're the majority are on the same page. With that being said, if there are no other comments from the RAC, I would entertain a motion.
I'd like to make that motion that we approve this plan as presented.
We have a motion seconded by Nick. Any discussion? All in favor? Unanimous. Motion carries. Thank you for filling in on that one, Darren. All right. Agenda item 7, Brian Shrimp, rule amendments.
Well, more people stayed than in the northern regions. Thank you guys for participating tonight. My name is Kyle Stone. I'm with the Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program. This presentation was put together by the Attorney General's Office because this is largely a change to the wording in the rule. Sorry. This is largely a change to the wording in the rule, and it is more the legal term that we are proposing to change. So what is the change? We are looking to allow brine shrimp CORs are allowed to be transferred between different owners. And currently, the rule, you have to transfer either the entire business entity as well as any harvesting equipment that are associated with that COR. And there have been some changes in the structure of the brine shrimp harvesting industry. And we're just gonna kind of go over those a little bit today. So a little background for you on brine shrimp, because I don't think very many people are familiar with brine shrimp in the room here. They are a unique species in that they have a different life cycle that they can produce both live young as well as diapausic cysts. So the cysts can survive the winter, very harsh conditions. They're actually very hardy. They're easy to collect, process, dry out. You can can them, and then you can ship them anywhere, and then put them in to conditions that are favorable. They will hatch, and they produce a nice, rich food source for the aquaculture industry. Great Salt Lake is the only commercial fishery in the state, and commercial harvest began in the 1950s and carries on through today. Cysts are harvested clean, dried, processed by the harvest industry, and they are regulated by the division. These cysts, they rehydrate them, they hatch, and it is primary for the feeding of certain fish within the aquaculture industry. Tiger prawns, some table shrimp require a live prey source to chase before you can just feed them pellets. This last previous year, the 2018-2019 season, there was over 33 million pounds of brine shrimp harvested. So it's a pretty large scale process. Currently there are 79 CORs available to the harvest industry. CORs are renewable each year at a cost of $15,000. They are associated with a royalty on each raw pound harvested, and that is 3¼ cents right now that those companies do pay associated with that. The 79 CORs are currently, in 2005, they were divided amongst 24 companies. Over the years, in 2006, the Great Salt Lake Brine Shrimp Cooperative was created, and a bunch of those companies consolidated. It is currently, there are 15 companies within that co-op, and one standalone company, which is Ocean Star International. By joining a co-op, they can reduce their overhead costs. It allows them to compete better on the world market. Aquaculture industry has grown exponentially in the last 25, 30 years, and this just allows this industry to compete by going into this co-op. The co-op does all of the harvesting, processing, marketing for all of its COR members. So all companies with the CORs right now, there are 68 CORs within the co-op, and there are 11 CORs outside of the co-op. So the laws that govern this is, like I said before, CORs are transferable, but they require that you transfer either one of the following, either the the entire brine shrimp operation, that sole business entity, or the harvesting equipment associated with that particular COR. So the problem that we have now is that the co-op owns all of the harvesting equipment. The individual businesses do not own any equipment. So the business owns the COR, but they do not own the equipment, so they can't transfer that with it. So in order for them to do that, they either have to sell off the entire business, or they just have to stay in it. They can't do anything to regroup, because each company can own multiple CORs. So the solution that the Attorney General's office, as well as working with the industry, that they came up with, was to change the definition of what is considered harvesting equipment. And that is to include not only the physical harvesting equipment that would usually be used to harvest brine shrimp cysts, which include boats and boom and the way that they do this. It would also include an assignable contract with an effective remaining term of 5 years or more with a business entity that possesses a COR and would be with an entity that would conduct either all of the harvesting for that company, or they would allow them to check out equipment and use that to harvest. So there's two different mechanisms for that. So this COR transfer approval, an individual COR may be transferred under that contract. The contract is assigned to the buyer in conjunction with the COR transfer, or the contract has a remaining term of 5 years. As part of the transfer, the division would receive a copy of that contract or an affidavit signed that the contracting entity providing the harvesting will accept that buyer and recognize them and do the harvesting for them or lease them the equipment to use. And that's pretty much all we have. If you guys have any questions, I can tackle those for you.
Go ahead, Austin.
Quick question. Does that still prevent or protect somebody with a COR from reselling it for a higher value, or are we going to get into price gouging on that, or is that not even a concern?
Yeah, so that is what we're trying to do here, is having that contract to go with it. It should prevent them from selling it to the highest bidder. It would just allow them to renew it at the $15,000. But then the other thing this does is it limits it, so we're not just selling them off every year. They've got to have that 5-year contract that goes with them. And so largely this will be, I would assume, an internal thing amongst the co-op, because they can ultimately, this just limits who can buy it. It doesn't matter who can sell it. It's just a way that they can sell it. It doesn't limit who can buy it. It limits how they can sell it, and it just allows them to be able to sell it.
So is it fair to say that these rule changes are designed, that the industry has evolved,
yes,
to a better, into a more efficient industry? We're making rules to catch up with the evolution that's already taken place in the industry.
Yes, so this rule was written in the early 90s. The co-op was formed in the mid-2000s. So we've got about 15 years where whoever came up with the original brine shrimp rule never saw a co-op coming, because there were originally 32 companies out there fighting for space. There are now essentially two. So,
any other questions from the RAC? All right. We do have one comment card, Tim Hawks.
I guess you can ask a question, too, if you want, Tim, because we didn't give a question period. But.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'll try not to ask Kyle any tough questions. Tim Hawks, I'm here on behalf of the brine shrimp industry, and I just wanted to express on behalf of that industry our support for this rule change, our appreciation to Kyle and the division for working with industry really to update the rule to reflect the reality of the business environment today, brine shrimp industry. I know this is really down in the weeds for each of you, but we really appreciate your time and attention and your service in this regard. If you have any questions about either the industry generally or about this rule change in particular, I'm more than happy to weigh in and answer them or to talk to you after the meeting wraps up. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments from the RAC? I would entertain a motion. Have a motion from Craig, seconded by Sean. Any discussion?
Sorry, who seconded that?
Sean. No discussion. We'll call for a vote. All in favor? It's unanimous. It carries. Thank you for that. That was very informative. There was a, it's always amazing with stuff like that that I'm not familiar with, some of the things you learn, especially when you're talking the pounds that were harvested. That I looked at Kevin and I said, there were probably not that many pounds of mammals harvested in the state last year. All right. The last item is just informational for the RAC. This is the 2020 RAC schedule. You can look down through that. If there are any issues that you know of off the top of your head, just I'll tell you to get with Kevin.
So we have the opportunity, or you have the opportunity with the RAC, to change the schedule for next year if you would like. The way it's currently, this just reflects what we did this year, that we would have the April and May meetings in Beaver, the August meeting in Richfield, the September meeting in Hurricane, and the November and December meetings in Cedar City. That simply reflects what we did this year. Is there any desire to change the locations of any of those RAC meetings?
I did have a question. Sean and I were actually talking earlier. Is there any possibility of getting one on the other side of the mountain, maybe to get some of those folks involved?
Sure. We can hold them where this body decides to hold them.
You can't change the date, right?
No, the date can't be changed. That's set by the board schedule. Yep. But the starting times and the location, if there's a desire, I mean I can't think that we've had one in Panguitch or in Kanab in my time. But certainly those would be options.
And do we have to decide that right now?
Yes.
Oh.
May 19th in Brian Head. How's that? Is that the other side of the mountain?
No. the other requirement is there needs to be a venue that we can, but I think we could find a venue in most places.
And I'm okay as it is. It is just something that I would like us to look into. I will be a little more prepared next time and maybe.
Yeah. I would say this has evolved this way over time based on attendance and participation, and that's why they are where they are. So.
Austin.
I was just going to ask about starting times. I know some of these meetings that go really late, like 7 o'clock seems late, but is that strictly for travel time for us and members? Has that kind of been a consensus? Or?
Yeah, we try to, I think the desire would be to start all of them later in the evening for the convenience of the public so that they can come and participate. That's the reason why we have the meetings. But there's a recognition that some of the meetings, particularly the April and November meetings, are very long agendas typically. That's where we deal with big game stuff, and those meetings go long. And so we've opted, you know, like I said, over time, as this process has developed, to start those meetings earlier so that we have time to give to work through the agenda. The 6 o'clock start time in December has been kind of a tradition in the southern region just because of how early it gets dark and traveling late at night. It's really just a convenience. It's what the RAC has decided to do over the years. So,
Vernon?
Oh, I'd look at that Hurricane meeting. I have a hard time getting there. I don't know whether they have it there because it's closer for half the RAC or whatever, and it seems like probably didn't have a quorum there, did you, or? Is that a
We didn't have, I don't know if that was in Hurricane, it was in Hurricane that we didn't have a rack. That's the first time that's happened. The reason that that meeting exists in Hurricane is we've heard a lot of feedback in the past, Verland, about St. George is the largest population center in the southern region, and to have one meeting down there is an ask, we've had a request to have at least one meeting there because it is the largest population center in the southern region. That's how that meeting came to be.
Well, as long as you keep having the fish there, I guess we're okay.
All right. If there's no discussion on changing that, then that will. Do we have to have a motion on that one, Kevin, or we just?
No, we're just as long as there's agreement within the rack, we'll just keep it the way it is, and that's how we'll run for the next year.
All right, perfect. Our next meeting will be April 14th, and meeting adjourned. Thank you. Tie ball game.